We present the News Quiz with your host, Miles Jupp.
Hello! And welcome to the News Quiz. We start with an excerpt from Grange Now magazine, read by Neil Sleet.
One house I visited in Fernley Avenue was quite petite, but packed a tremendous display of flora. I also greatly admired the gentleman's neat back passage. It gave the sense of space, with subtle fragrance from the many clinging flowers.
Our thanks to Stephen Dixon for sending that in. Now let's meet the teams. Will you welcome first, on my right, Holly Walsh and assistant editor of The Spectator, Isabel Hardman. And opposite them, on my left, Andrew Maxwell and comedian Fern Brady. Holly, who did like to be beside the seaside?
Well, this is the Labour Party conference. This was obviously a big event for Jeremy Corbyn since he won the election. Everybody there treated him like he did win it. They're doing sort of football chants. They go, "Oh, Jeremy Corbyn." I think they should do that all party conferences, like Tories, you know, "You're going home in a booper ambulance." Lib Dems, they're like, "Is this a library?" But... good at speeches, although I'm sure he always looks a little bit out of place when he's on stage, because he looks like a sort of folk singer who's now doing the O2, you know, like it's like Judas, because he's using a microphone, that kind of thing. The two things I took from it was rent control. He wanted to impose rent control, which I think is pretty good. Also, he was incredibly against forced gentrification, which didn't surprise me, because Jeremy Corbyn does not look like somebody who is into almond milk lattes with a stenciled cinnamon leaf on top. He looks like the kind of guy who's mellow bird all over. I was impressed by it. I think he did a good job. I mean, was it as good as it seemed?
Well, it was very well received in the conference hall by the members. What was interesting was that there weren't so many MPs around. In fact, the day before his speech, I was phoning round MPs, and everyone who picked up the phone, there was a sort of sound of trains in the background. They were saying, "Oh, I'm going home, actually. No one really likes me here. There's no one listening to me." And the people who were sort of almost as hated as the MPs, who obviously tried to get rid of Jeremy Corbyn before the election, were journalists, because, well, with the media, the mainstream media, but also we got the election wrong. We all predicted that Jeremy Corbyn wasn't going to win, and obviously, as Holly said, he did win a landslide defeat. I do think, actually, we've got a lot to learn about how we got this wrong and how we don't understand the Corbyn phenomenon. And there was a parallel conference running alongside this, which was run by Momentum, who are a kind of grassroots organisation supporting Jeremy Corbyn. It was called The World Transformed, and it had an acid night. And also, I know I sound like my dad talking about Boyzone here, but also a lot of grime. But actually, this is just a completely different world for all of us. We don't understand the kind of cultural roots of Corbynism. They have their own insults for people who disagree with them. And one of them is centrist dad, which to me sounds like my dream date. But so I've got a lot to learn.
Fern, did you get to see any of it?
Yeah, I joined the Labour Party today for a weird reason. Basically, my boyfriend's a policy wonk who's sort of centre-left and doesn't like Corbyn. And last night, I try and find increasingly innovative ways to annoy him as time goes on. So I emailed him yesterday because I was bored, thinking of joining Momentum. Then I just sat back and rubbed my hands, waiting on the reply. He came home and he went, "You can't join Momentum. This is like the time you said you wanted a pet rat, or the days you say you want a puppy. You don't understand the consequences of things." So today I set up the direct debits for Labour, Momentum, forwarded it to him. That's just the way I hope.
Andrew, did you watch any of it?
No, I didn't.
Yes, what?
But who's going to watch a sports hall full of, you know, 1,000 people agreeing with somebody? Like, it's, you know, no.
You didn't think there was enough sort of angry debate or whatever you thought they should have...
No, genuinely, I think it's a done deal. He will be the next Prime Minister. Brexit has changed the dynamics of British politics so much. If, you know, people are in this country, you can feel it. People are like, well, if we're going to buy into the nonsense of Brexit, why not Corbyn? If we're going to, like, fall off a cliff edge and start competing against the rest of the world by WTO rules, all the while painting Spitfires and singing the national anthem, then why not Jeremy Corbyn's nonsense from the 70s? Like, it just... It's, you know, I can feel it. You can feel it in the country. People are like, they don't necessarily haven't been won over by Corbyn. They're just like, screw it. Why not? Yes. It's like, why don't we get an extra round of drinks on the Titanic? Yeah. That was the quote I heard this week. That's how the country is. Like, yeah, why not? On a weekly basis, David Davis comes back from Europe going, we made a lot of progress. We're really seeing eye to eye. We're really moving things along. And then they turn around to the EU and go, nothing happened. He just ran around the room going,
room. Yeah, he's like a sort of reluctant child being sent off to music lessons that he doesn't really want and that he never practices for, and then comes and goes, yeah, it's fine again, yeah, same time next week. He's presumably set homework over the weekend that he never, ever does.
We're through the looking glass. But I think he's going to be the next Prime Minister. It's not going to be Theresa May. I mean, come on. Like, how is she still the Prime Minister? There's more in an Easter egg. Hollow nobody. Skin-draped robot.
These were the exciting scenes in Brighton this week. Jeremy Corbyn announced, we are now the political mainstream, before immediately shouting shame and angrily beating himself about the head and body while denouncing himself as an out-of-touch elitist. He was given a 2.5-minute standing ovation before he'd even started speaking, which in this country is the sort of thing usually reserved for celebrities having a stab at Hamlet or when a waiter drops a plate in a harvester. Jeremy Corbyn described Labour as the government in waiting, finally discovering the actual point of the opposition. I can't wait for him to discover that the Q in PMQ stands for questions. Corbyn also paid tribute to Diane Abbott, pointing out that she alone received almost half of all the abuse sent to all female MPs during the election, and then sang her happy birthday. Another great day for Diane. She was told loads of people hate her and reminded that she's getting old. Alongside the conference, Momentum ran an event called The World Transformed, which involved consciousness-raising workshops, a socialist disco, and a pub quiz run by Ed Miliband, all of which I suspect can only be adequately described with the words, hell on earth. 2 points to Holly. Isabel, why is the Reichstag in a right state?
Well, Angela Merkel has won a historic fourth term as German Chancellor, but the big story of the German election results has been that a very xenophobic party, the Alternative for Deutschland, got 12.5% of the vote and now has representation in the Bundestag. This is a party that actually believes that Germany should stop apologising for the Nazis. So it's quite a shocking result. And I found out an interesting fact this week, which is that Angela Merkel's fondness for procrastination and not taking decisions, something Theresa May likes to model herself on, has actually spawned a new verb, which is Merklin, which means to avoid taking decisions. And I was trying to think what the Theresa May equivalent might be. So I thought, what about Eine May Focklin, which is a sudden, unexplained and entirely self-inflicted catastrophe.
UKIP must be annoyed, mustn't they? They must be very jealous of their German.
Well, because they've got cousins. I suppose they have proportional representation in Germany.
Yeah, exactly. Right? They would have done well under that, wouldn't they? But I was wondering if maybe UKIP were thinking about rebranding themselves, you know, Alternative for Deutschland and then Alternative for UK. But that doesn't really work when you say that out loud.
Well, it doesn't matter what happens to UKIP. Nigel will always pop up on our TVs. He's not the leader of the party. He's not even the former leader. He's the former leader. He gets booked for everything. Whenever I see Nigel Farage on the news nowadays, I just can't help but feel sorry for the other people that have lost 7 Westminster elections in a row and can't even get into the Parish Gazette. Alternative for Deutschland, 1.1 million of their voters had never voted before. You know, this is the age we're living in. We've all got comfortable in the last 50 years in Western democracies that the people who vote are the people who pay attention. whether you agree with them or not, they will have read a newspaper, they will watch the news, and that's it. But now we live in an age with Facebook, and it can tickle places nobody in the political class or the media class has ever got to. There's people on the populist far right managed to dumb down things so much that they can get it. Like Alternative for Deutschland's main poster campaign was two girls in bikinis going, "We're in favour of bikinis and against burkas." Like, who can disagree with that? It's like, you know what I mean? I think a lot of people, you know, feel intimidated to vote because, oh, it's a bit too complicated and I don't really... You know, what kind of numbnut can't get their head around yes to bikinis, no to burkas?
I mean, you sound like you're sort of won over yourself. Have you been following the AfD's...
I saw that last I checked, Trump still hadn't congratulated Merkel on getting back in. He really doesn't like her, does he?
She's educated, she's intelligent. She's not a bought bride from somewhere.
Right? That would be wonderful if you bought a bride and you got Angela Merkel. That would be... Yeah. I mean, actually, I would love that. She's my role model, I'd love that.
Box opens, hello! Who wants to discuss policy? Who's interested in having a round chair discussion about the next 5 years' fiscal policy?
You know, that would really piss off your boyfriend if you joined AfD.
Yeah.
I think that's the next step in your breakdown of your relationship.
Well, I'm running out of ways to annoy him, so it's not unfeasible.
I mean, I'd say a swastika tattoo would absolutely kill it, so...
These are the results of the German elections, where Angela Merkel's CDU led with 33% of the vote. But for the first time in decades, the far right have entered the German parliament, with the AfD winning 94 seats, which means we might just be able to say those words that so many Radio 4 listeners have been longing to hear. Finally, it feels like it's 1930 again. Giving her victory speech, Mrs. Merkel looked incredibly miserable, in stark contrast to her campaign appearances, where she merely looked incredibly miserable. AfD's 94 seats mean that Germany's number of days since we had fascists in parliament sign has had to be reset to zero. Theresa May is said to have rung Mrs. Merkel after the results. At least they think it was her. It was an anonymous 3 a.m. voicemail containing laughter, a raspberry, and the words, "You ain't all that in a bag of chips, girlfriend." 2 points to Isabel. Fern, who's gone from behind the times to behind the wheel?
Saudi Arabia is allowing women to drive for the first time since 1990. Now, everyone thinks this is great, but the whole thing's a PR move on King Salman's part, so that we focus on that instead of the fact that this is a country that still has crucifixion and basically considers anything women do other than blinking or breathing to be incredibly slutty and a danger to Saudi morals. And because feminism's having a moment just now, it's common for non-feminists, especially in politics, to claim to like have these policies in order to gain points with others. So basically Saudi Arabia is that guy at a party claiming to be a male feminist just to try and get off with you. Like my dad, who's a very basic Scottish man, has suddenly started thinking he's a feminist just because there's more in the media about it. So he's the boss of a garage and he keeps phoning me up telling me about his feminist actions. So he was like, "You'd be proud of me. I employed a female mechanic. She killed a rat with a shovel." It's like teaching a monkey to play the accordion, which incidentally is also banned in Saudi because it's too much fun. Like, there's no actual understanding of why gender equality would be beneficial for everyone. You just know you're going to get a banana at the end of it. And even though they've passed the driving thing, but in the meantime, women still can't work without their guardian's permission, read uncensored fashion magazines, go to a cemetery alone, try on clothes in a shop, that's too sexy, have their own bank account, do sport, dress for beauty, socialise with men that aren't their husbands or relatives. So basically, they can't do anything except drive round and round like disenfranchised hoodies. Hey ladies, anyone want a lift to the crucifixion tonight? just before this was brought in, a Saudi cleric said that it wasn't women's fault because they have periods which affect their brains, and that when they go to market they only have a quarter of their brains left to drive because women love shoes. And another clinic claimed that there's medical evidence that women's ovaries are damaged by driving.
My own driving experience aside, my car's actually at the garage at the moment because I managed to get it stuck on a pillar in a multi-storey car park. I do actually genuinely think that this will be good for society, as you were saying. You know, gender equality is good for society because women are better drivers, apart from me. But Saudi women will be better drivers.
I never understand why people buy expensive cars. Why don't they just buy a really cheap car and then get a chauffeur? I'd do that. You know, you could have a... It'd be great to have a chauffeur. Wouldn't you love one? I mean, you've got one, Miles. I'm sorry, yeah. I shouldn't have...
It's simply a matter of getting from A to B in the quickest possible time. And, you know, I've got the lads with me. Obviously, we'll get the windows down, pull a few moonies. It's about... You know, life is there for living, Holly.
I find it weird that they call it a sort of... It's sort of like they talk about it breaking an ancient Sharia law, but cars aren't that...
Yeah, they cannot be an ancient...
It's like the ancient law that women should not jet ski. What's the rules on dodgems in Saudi Arabia?
You've got to keep your hands inside the car at all times. they're not ridiculous.
I doubt if they have them.
Dodgems?
I bet they don't. I mean, phone in if you do. if you're the Saudi ambassador right now listening to this in the back of the car being driven around like a girl. ring in Radio 4 and tell us whether you got dodgems, and do you let the sisters get in the dodgems?
This is the news that after years of protest, King Salman of Saudi Arabia has decreed that from June 2018, women in the country will be allowed to drive. There are, of course, many things women still can't do in Saudi Arabia, such as apply for a passport or find a pub with a half-decent carvery. It's argued that women driving goes against Sharia law, clearly disregarding the passage in the Quran that states, if the mountain won't come to Muhammad, time for Mrs. Muhammad to just run him down there in the Peugeot. Still, it's tremendous news for Saudi women. Now they'll finally know the unfettered joy of getting stuck on a narrow slip road in a four-hour queue for a wild bean cafe. 2 points to Fern. And at the end of round one, the scores are Holly and Isabel have 4, and so too do Andrew and Fern. We start round two with an excerpt from the Isle of Wight County Press.
A sub-editing error in a report in this week's County Press newspaper led us to mix up the name Declan Clary and the subject of his talk, William Chester Minor. We should remove any confusion by saying that it was William Chester Minor who subsequently spent a period in Broadmoor, having committed murder. And, of course, not Mr. Clary.
Thanks to Catherine Nicholson for sending us that. Andrew, who's only just noticed that his country is on its knees?
This is all about these NFL players, you know, American football players, at the national anthem, instead of standing, they bend on one knee to protest against police brutality. And he's made a massive thing about that, about they're un-American and not patriotic and all. And deep down, we all know he's only bringing this up because he has no idea what to do with North Korea. He has no idea how to form any public policy whatsoever. So instead, we get some horse... gack instead. You know, it's Fox News politics. It's, you know, it's spread it on to now that NASCAR, which I don't really know this, is this American car racing thing that's massive with hillbillies. And NASCAR said that any of their drivers don't salute the flag, that they'll get instantly sacked for being un-American. NASCAR, a sport that literally came out of souping up cars to outrun the police during Prohibition. Somehow these bootlegger boys, they're not un-American. He's just infuriated.
For all that he's going on about patriotism, though, there's a clip online of him, Melania, and his son having to sing the national anthem, and Melania had to give him a little nudge to remind him to put his hand on his chest, proving that immigrants do have their place in America.
I think the NFL is crap, isn't it? I only ever watch... I just watch the Super Bowl once a year and I record it. You know, the Super Bowl final, you know, it's an hour's solid entertainment rammed into 6 hours. Why is it all... got stopped again.
Yeah. Now you sound like Trump, what? Saying that the NFL's boring and no one watches it. Although Trump actually did try to buy an NFL team a few years ago and didn't, so I think this might be personal because he was actually NFI by the NFL.
Yeah. Absolutely. He would have loved to have bought a team, the New York Rubles.
This is the latest statesmanlike intervention from US President Donald Trump, who this week said that American footballers should be fired if they kneel during the national anthem because this is disrespectful to the United States of America. Of course, we have to remember that there is nothing more respectful than putting on crash helmets and then running into each other at speed, all in order to participate in what many always thought impossible, a game even more tedious than rugby. The protest began under President Obama when Colin Kaepernick knelt down as a way of highlighting police brutality against black Americans. There's been so much kerfuffle since, I've forgotten if he was for or against, but I'm sure Google will have the answer. Some commentators have pointed out that the custom of players standing for the national anthem only began in 2007, but this being the US, that makes it America's second oldest tradition. Very much their Stonehenge. Donald Trump's war with the NFL has been going on since the 1980s, when he tried several times to buy a team of his own, but was always unsuccessful because, and I quote American sports writer Jeff Perlman, they thought he was a scumbag huckster. Time, as always, will tell on that one. The American stock car competition NASCAR has said it will fire any drivers who kneel during the anthem, plunging those drivers into a life of welfare dependency and substance abuse 4 to 5 years ahead of schedule. If you don't know what NASCAR is, it's basically like Formula One, but both the cars and the fans are that little bit slower. Two points to Andrew. Holly, who has been heading up a protest movement?
Well, this is the story of a headmaster from Sussex who has basically sort of single-handedly... What's the word?
Galvanised.
Yeah, galvanised, that's it. This is the story of a headmaster from Sussex who's trying to galvanise the... Thank you. The parents of the country to turn against the government, which is quite impressive. What he's done is he's written to 2.5 million parents with the help of 4,000 other head teachers, telling them that basically if your school is bad, it's not because the school is necessarily bad, it's because the government aren't funding it properly and they should put another £1 billion into it. They never said how they sent the letters out. I think if they gave them to the kids, then it's... There's a good chance there's at least 2 million letters at the bottom of some grotty teenager's rucksack. But what they've done is they've basically created the country's biggest PTA. It's quite impressive. This is the Parents Teachers Association, which anyone who's ever been involved with a PTA will know. They're like the mafia. You don't get on the bad side of
them. I hope he did manage to use free post, because otherwise the cost of the stamps might have added another funding problem for his school and all the others. It is something that MPs, including Tory MPs, are actually really worked up about, and given that Theresa May has given £1 billion to the DUP to stay in government, it's very difficult for ministers to counter anything anymore by saying we've got to be fiscally restrained. So I wouldn't be surprised if there were a U-turn on this at some point in the next few months anyway. Currently they're upset about trains in the north because they don't
work. No, they've got to have them.
Where's your Ernie? He's off to train. Ooh, has one of his pigeons gone missing again? He's going to get that weekly train. What a fancy bastard. You imagine it. I never thought when I brought that child into this world, we'd one day have a child who went on train. It's essentially bullying the Prime Minister. But we all went to primary school. Some kids deserved it. Right? I mean, bullying as a rule is bad, but, like, sometimes it's good to weed out the weak. If weeding out the weak isn't the point of being a Conservative, what is the point? Yeah. Oh, I would have bullied her if I was in school with her. She would have never had lunch.
One time we all queued round my primary school to kick the school bully up the bum.
And it was so good because he'd like nicked stuff off of me for years, and I was so excited to finally kick him. I was really geeky at school, and just as my foot made contact with his arse, the headmistress came into the school ground, and I looked around, and just leaves blew through the empty playground, and I got done for bullying. That's what bullies always say.
There's pressure on schools. There are certain things that you could do to relieve that pressure, aren't there? You could say to teachers, if you're finding it a bit much this week, just stick a video on, whatever it might be.
You know, at school was so exciting, weren't they? And then when you grow up, you realise it was actually because your teacher was hungover. Yeah. It wasn't because they wanted to teach you about the blast furnace. They just needed to turn the lights off.
Sorry, guys. You've all been so good at geography this term. I thought it was time that we watched Danny Baker's football foul-ups. This is a letter-writing campaign to protest about cuts in school funding coordinated by Horsham head teacher Jules White with the support of 4,000 heads nationwide. If this headmaster really needs more money, there's a much more effective letter he could be writing to parents. Maybe one beginning, "We have your children." The letter was received joyously by parents when they realised it wouldn't involve them having to put up with a French teenager for a fortnight. Meanwhile, the headmaster of Eton is writing to all parents with the answers to this year's A-levels. Two points to Holly. Before we reveal the final scores, has anybody got a cutting they'd like to share?
This is from John Sampson. A church has apologised for hosting a satanic-themed fashion show with models wearing devil horns and inverted crosses. A spokesman for the church said, "We took the booking in good faith."
Dan Martyr sent in this notice from the Horton County Park local nature reserve. "Please put all dog feces in a bag and place it in a dog."
Thank you. And now let's take a look at the final score. Holly and Isabel have 8, but this week's winners are Andrew and Fern with 9. Before we leave you, here is a cutting from Australia's Sunshine Coast Daily, sent in by Alex Cove.
Sunshine Coast families relying on tank water are at crisis point, as residents continue to face waiting times of 3 to 4 weeks as tank levels hit zero. Bald Knob resident John Brown has been trying to get water for about 2 weeks.
And with that, goodbye.
Taking part in the news quiz were Holly Walsh, Isabel Hardman, Andrew Maxwell and Fern Brady. In the chair was Miles Jupp, and the news is read by me, Neil Sweet. The chair's script was written by Sarah Campbell, John Hunter and James Kettle, with additional material by Athena Kuklenu and Jenny LaVille. The producer was Joe Nunnery, and it was a BBC Studios production.
And you can tune in to the news.